Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to the Max Clark Show, where we talk about things that matter. Now, do me a favor, before we get started, click the subscribe button and click the notification bell so you'll be notified about part two of our series of Untold Stories. Now, this is the first in our series called The Untold Story of the Death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Now, why is this important? Well, we've been diluted for decades with I Have a Dream. Okay? They gave us really a safe and watered down version of who Dr. King really was. Growing up, all we heard was I Have a Dream. I Have a Dream. And all we recited during January and to celebrate his birthday, we have to recite the I Have a Dream speech. Every student had to memorize it. And we had assemblies and somebody, you know, we had certain students that came up and they recited the I Have a Dream speech and they, you know, they did a really good job with it. You know, I mean, it was so deep that, you know, even some households, some black households, children would have to recite the I Have a Dream speech. I mean, it was deep. And that really sanitized who Dr. King really was, because if the media had talked about his final book before his assassination, and if they replayed his speeches the last year or two of his life, then this would have changed the whole dynamic of class and race in the United States today in a good way, in a positive way. Now, Dr. King was the most hated man in America in 1967. Can you believe that? Now, that's what the media don't tell you. A lot of people don't know that Dr. King was the most hated man in 1967 because of his criticism of the Vietnam War. At that time, 63% of the American people had a negative view of Dr. King. In an April 1967 speech at Riverside Church in New York City, Dr. King publicly denounced the American involvement in Indochina, which was, you know, the Vietnam. And in his speech, this is what he said, and I quote, "This business of burning human beings with napalm, of filling our nation's homes with orphans and widows, of injecting poisonous drugs of hate into the veins of peoples normally humane, of sending men home from dark and bloody battlefields physically handicapped and psychologically deranged, cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death." That's what Dr. King said. He's talking about the United States war machine. Now, those words ring so true today, because if you close your eyes and you don't hear Dr. King saying it, you can hear someone, you know, in today's society saying those exact words, and it'll ring true, because this is what's going on to this very day. And many in King's inner circle, they warned him against making a speech and publicly campaigning against the war. And their argument was that President Johnson had risked his neck for the African-American community on issues like civil rights, health care, welfare, and, you know, by publicly condemning his foreign policy, that would irreparably harm the relationship between the black activists and, you know, President Johnson. Now, let's deal with that for a minute. President Johnson did not stick his neck out for the black community. King and the civil rights leaders, they were here to make sure that the government did good on its promise. The Civil Rights Treaty of 1866, and I call it a treaty because the treaty is a formally concluded and ratified agreement between countries. Between countries. Between nations. The 1866 Civil Rights Treaty was an agreement between two nations. Though our representatives were white, it was a treaty dedicated to black folks. We can dive into that at another time. The 1866 Civil Rights Treaty stated verbatim, quote, all persons within the jurisdiction of the United States shall have the same right in every state and territory to make and enforce contracts, to sue, be parties, give evidence, and to the full and equal benefit of all laws and proceedings for the security of persons and property as is enjoyed by white citizens, and shall be subject to like punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and exactions of every kind, and to no other, end quote. And this is the most important part. They said, all laws and proceedings for the security of persons and property as is enjoyed by white citizens. In other words, equality. The Civil Rights Treaty of 1866 made the black man equal with the white man. But we know that the United States wasn't having any of that. But that's what the Civil Rights Movement was about. It was, hey, this is what you said you were going to do. Now we need you to do it. We're going to hold you up to that. And this is what we were owed. And this is what we were coming for. So President Johnson didn't do anything special. All he had to do was repair a broken treaty between two nations. So give me what you owe. That was the vibe. That was the vibe of the Civil Rights Movement. Now the U.S. has broken every treaty it has entered into since its inception. This is very, very important to understand as it relates to Dr. King's philosophy about economic empowerment. Most people like to use the quote that Dr. King used, that he said, I fear I have led my people into a burning house or a burning building. And everything that Dr. King has accomplished is starting to be diminished within the so-called conscious community and those who call themselves woke. The claim is that integration destroyed our communities. I beg to differ, because slavery, Reconstruction, Jim Crow, racial zoning, racially restrictive covenants, redlining, the Urban Renewal Act, and the Federal Aid Highway Act of 1956. Oh, and not to mention the so-called New Deal by Franklin Roosevelt, President Roosevelt, which excluded. A lot of people don't know this. The media don't talk about this. Historians don't talk about this. But the New Deal, it excluded farm workers and domestic workers. Now, that's very important because those were the primary occupations of black folks. Now, let's be clear. Dr. King's message of love was necessary. It was very necessary. Because by his nonviolent movement, it exposed the evils of this nation to the entire planet. So the whipped cream and cherries version that the United States puts forth to the world was revealed to be a lie. You know, the saying goes, once you tell a spectacular lie long enough, the truth becomes unbelievable. And King and the Civil Rights Movement exposed the United States for what it really is. Now, King taught black empowerment. He said, don't just be an employee, become an employer. That's what a lot of people don't understand. So if you study Dr. King, you will know that this is what he was pushing for our people. But they needed the White House involved, because the president has to sign off on these things. See, you have to understand politics. And I believe King and the other civil rights players, they understood politics. It's a way that you have to do something. You got to get something done. And the person who has to sign it for it to become law, you got to deal with that person. So we have to understand politics. That's very, very important. King wanted to eradicate poverty by having the government guarantee every American a middle-class income. every American. Now let's put this in the perspective, okay? Let's deal with this. So Dr. King said to the white man and the white woman, okay, check it out. We have to include white women in this, especially at that time. At that time, because white women, usually not all, but a large portion of white women followed and agreed with their husband's thoughts and actions. Okay? So many black men have been lynched, burned, dragged, shot, and anything else you could think of under the sun because white women lied on black men. They would say things like, he raped me, or he whistled at me, or he looked at me. So many black men have died because of that. And Dr. King still told them that even in the midst of all that evil, we should still be able to eat at the same lunch counter, go to the same movie house, drink from the same fountain, swim in the same pool, go to the same schools, live in the same communities. Not only that, King told them that he believes that they should have a living wage as well. These were poor white folks we were dealing with in the South and in the North. Poor white folks. I'm not sure that, you know, if any of you who classify yourselves as black or those who don't classify themselves as black, I don't know if, you know, we could really extend that hand that Dr. King extended, or that olive branch that Dr. King extended. I don't think that we can do that today after what they went through. Dr. King still said, hey, we need to work together, because Dr. King understood the game as being played then, and it's the same game that's being played now. Now, I'm not sure, you know, Dr. King is the most important figure of the 20th and 21st century, period. Economic empowerment for blacks, especially, but also for everyone, was part of his agenda. Even when 63% of the United States citizens disliked Dr. King. Now, as it relates to his vision, he laid out the case for a guaranteed income. Guaranteed income. He laid out the case for guaranteed income for everyone in his final book in 1967 called Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community. That was the name of his book. Now, I'll end with this, and, you know, be sure to tune in to part two of the untold story of the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So I just wanted to prep you for why Dr. King was assassinated. And I mean, the plot thickens. The plot thickens as we dig deeper in part two. So, hey, please hit the notification button and the subscribe button and give us a thumbs up. It helps the channel to grow, okay? And make sure you tell a friend. Make sure you tell a friend about this. This is some good information, all right? Now, okay, lastly, King had a trusted advisor. He was low-key. He was in the background. Nobody really knew about him, but nobody talks about it. And we don't understand how these black folks did all of this. And they were able to, you know, boycott and, you know, go to jail and things like that. They say, well, where's all this money coming from? How did they bail these people out of jail? How is this movement funded? How is it funded? A lot of people don't know. You know, we have people behind the scenes. A man by the name of Robert Walker was one of Dr. King's, you know, trusted advisors. And this brother had contacts with major corporations. You know, King said, hey, man, hey, we need $10,000, $25,000, $50,000. He would go get it from these major corporations. Black folks wasn't owning any of these corporations back then. These were white folks. At the top. And there's a lesson to be learned about that. I mean, he raised bail money if they needed it. I mean, this brother was so essential to the movement that at that time, you know, there were only two black car dealerships in the nation. In the United States, only two car dealerships, black car dealerships. He said, this is utterly ridiculous. So he went to Chrysler and told them, hey, we gotta go find some black car dealers so we can fix this situation. And boom, what do we have today? I'm not sure how many black car dealerships we have today, but it's certainly more than two. And it's because of that man, Robert Walker. Okay, so, I mean, this guy was heavy. He was heavy. He was legit. He took executives out with him, put them in his car. Hey, let's go. He took executives out with him to show them what was going on. He didn't want them to receive secondhand information. He wanted them to, you know, see it up close and personal. They saw a lot of the beatings that took place during that time. One of his clients, one of his clients was Woolworth for 30 years. Woolworth, who would ever thought Woolworth? Now, when you think of Woolworth, you think of the lunch counters, the sit-ins, you know, you think of all that. And who would think that Woolworth was working with a black man behind the scenes, a black movement behind the scenes? And Woolworth was notorious for the lunch counter incident that took place. Now, you know, Woolworth and these other major corporations, they're executives. I mean, these are top people. They're executives. They wanted peace. They wanted peace. And they didn't want to, and you know, they didn't see any harm in blacks and whites sharing water fountains. They didn't see any harm in black folks sharing bathrooms with white folks or eating from the same counter. You know why? They wanted to make money. Corporations are in business to stay in business. But more importantly, in order to stay in business, you have to make money. That's what it's about. So the whole black and white game that's being played, that's a game that's being played by the lower class. Okay? We deal with racism and we deal with classism. And sometimes that's kind of hard to differentiate, you know, certain situations. It's kind of hard to differentiate from, you know, if it was racism or if it was classism. But racism and classism, they're different, but they work hand in hand at the same time. It's just amazing. Now, all U.S. all the corporations, all they see is green. They don't see black, white, brown, and all this other nonsense. They don't see that. They see green. You know, now we can get to the real reason why the Civil War took place, but that's a whole other story in and of itself. And I will be dropping a podcast on the untold truth and story about the Civil War and why it took place. So stay tuned for that. Like I said, they want money. I mean, come on. Alabama. I mean, they were losing money as a result of Jim Crow segregation. They were losing money because of Jim Crow. So then they're like, hey, man, I don't care if these people want to sit down and have a sandwich with these white folks. That's money in my pocket. That's money in my pocket. I don't care. Because all we see is green. Green is the only color that matters to corporations. And that's what we have to understand. We have to understand that. So, you know, guys, I'm not going to keep it too long. I just wanted to give you a primer, okay, into the direction that we were going. You know, some untold information or little known truths about Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement. Now, part two, we're going to talk about the plot to kill Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Everybody was involved in this. I mean, you will be amazed how everyone was involved in this. I'm talking all the way from the mayor, all the way to the federal government. Oh, man. And I'm pretty sure you're going to say, well, yeah, we kind of figured that, you know, the FBI or CIA or whatever was involved in this. But we have to understand that James Earl Ray, he was a player in the plot, but he did not assassinate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Yeah, the plot thickens. It gets crazy. The U.S. government was held liable, responsible in a court of law, found guilty. Hey, guys, you know what? That's all I'm going to say. Hey, as always, love someone, love someone, love someone, love somebody, but more importantly, love yourself. Hit the subscribe button, hit the thumbs up button, hit the notification bell so you can get a notification of when part two of the Untold Story series is coming out. Peace.